Okay, we're looking at Freemasons tonight, and you have a handout there. The first page is kind of an outline of what we'll be going through, and we won't finish this tonight. The second page there is the degrees of advancement within the Masonic Lodge. We'll talk about that a little bit. The third page is a list of who's who on all the different people that have... that at least according to Masonic records are Masons. I'm not sure whether they all are really or whether Masonic people just claim them as being Masonic because that helps them sell Masonry. You know, if you can get a lot of famous people in there, it's sort of like an endorsement. So I don't know for sure. I know some of them definitely are Masons. Some of them are 33rd degree Masons. And the very last page is just a few... questions and scripture verses. So starting out with the introduction and history, and I'm just going to be basically reading bits and pieces from this book, Encyclopedia of Cults and New Religions, put together by John Ankerberg and John Weldon. Very good resource. I don't know if they still print it or not, but it's a very good resource for understanding what a lot of these cults believe. Masonry, or Freemasonry, or the Lodge, as it is called, is a powerful centuries-old fraternal order that began early in the 18th century. According to most Masonic authorities, modern Masonry, also called speculative Masonry, can be traced to the founding of the first Grand Lodge in London in 1717 AD. The Lodge is also a secret society. To maintain its secrets, Masonry uses symbolism, secret oaths, and secret rituals to instruct new members called initiates. Each new member swears during these secret ceremonies to remain loyal to the Lodge and its teachings. The teachings instruct each new candidate how to serve the Lodge and the rewards he can expect. In addition, Masonry views its mission as being to help conform the beliefs of all men into harmony, a harmony based primarily on Masonic teachings. Later, we might not get to this tonight, but we'll read some of the oaths that they have to take, which are self-imprecation oaths. May my throat be cut from, you know, and all the way down until I'm disemboweled and my body fed to the birds type language, if I should ever divulge the secrets of Masonry. Many have come out of Masonry and decided that was a silly oath, and they've rejected it and spilled the beans, so to speak. And there's lots of resources out there on Masonry because of that. Two of these teachings form the foundation of all Masonry. The first is a belief in the universal fatherhood of God and brotherhood of man. By this, Masons teach that all men, whether Muslims, Jews, Hindus, Mormons, or Buddhists, Christians, or whatever, regardless of their personal religious views, are the spiritual sons of God. Masonry's second foundational belief is that the reform of personal character and the practice of good works will secure God's favor. In other words, the Masonic Lodge clearly teaches that the good character and good works of a Mason will earn him a place in heaven, which is called the Celestial Lodge above. This, however, kind of contradicts their belief that everybody's saved anyway, their universalism tendency. So there's a bit of a contradiction there. In Albert Mackey's Revised Encyclopedia of Masonry, he states, quote, "All Masons unite in declaring it to be a system of morality, by the practice of which its members may advance their spiritual interest and mount by the theological ladder from the Lodge on earth to the Lodge in heaven." Other respected Masonic authorities define Masonry in the following words, quote, "Masonry is the realization of God by the practice of brotherhood." Number two, quote, "It is a science which is engaged in the search after divine truth and which employs symbolism as its method of instruction." Number three, "Masonry is that religious and mystical society whose aim is moral perfection on the basis of general equality and fraternity." And by the way, all these things that I'm quoting, this is footnoted throughout, multiple footnotes, but I'm not going to be quoting every single time where they got these. If you're interested in the bibliography, you're welcome to look at it afterwards. Another quote here, "Freemasonry in its broadest and most comprehensive sense is a system of morality and social ethics, a primitive religion, and a philosophy of life, incorporating a broad humanitarianism. It is a religion without it being of no sect, but finding truth in all. It seeks truth, but does not define truth." On the one hand, defining Masonry presents a dilemma. There's no single universal definition of masonry accepted by all Masons, because the practice means different and sometimes contrary things to individual Masons. Masonry, for some of its members, has largely become a social club, while for others, Masonry dominates their life and work as a religion they trust in for their salvation. This point is well stated by leading Masonic authority Henry Wilson Coyle in his book, A Comprehensive View of Freemasonry. He says, "Nobody knows what Freemasonry is, or, if that statement be deemed too strong, at least no one has been able to demonstrate that he knows the answer to the question. What one Mason or Masonic authority asserts, another of apparently equal ability doubts or denies. Nor is this divergence of opinion due to ignorance or lack of investigation, for conflicts arise principally among the most zealous and erudite of Masonic students. The fraternity has no central authority to declare its creed, and no censor of books to check aberrations. Anyone, either within or without the society, may speak or write about it what he wills, and many have taken advantage of that liberty." Coyle also discusses the basic problem represented by Freemasonry. Freemasonry, he says, has spread so widely, has expanded into so many degrees, up to 1,100 degrees, and has undergone so many changes, to say nothing of having been subjected to so many diverse interpretations, that the question, what is Freemasonry, must first be answered by another question, when, where, and what phase of it? Though much of Masonic doctrine has remained remarkably well fixed and stable, its laws have changed, its degrees have changed, its ceremonies have changed, its religion has changed, and doubtless the concepts of it by its members have changed. In a book, Newly Made Mason, H.L. Haywood refers to the obligations placed on new Mason. Here's one of their oaths. This doesn't involve the implications, though. "I hereby solemnly and sincerely promise and swear that as a beginning craftsman in the masonry of the mind, and as a newly made mason, I will not permit myself to be led into making hasty conclusions. I promise and swear that I will not listen to those who are not competent to teach me. There will be nothing binding on me except the truth. If there be those who say one thing, and if there be others who say the opposite thing, I will consider that it is Freemasonry itself which finally is to decide between them." I'm not sure how Freemasonry itself decides between them if there's no objectified authority on what Freemasonry is. But obviously, if Masonry itself is the authority, then those Masons who are agreed to have most accurately represented Masonry must be considered authorities on what the Lodge believes and teaches. He says here, "We agree that what is presented may not necessarily coincide with the individual beliefs of any given Mason. Some Masons have no interest in the history and doctrines of Masonry. But for others, Masonry is a religious worldview that dominates their life and their work." Three distinct levels of religious awareness, three types of Masons: nominally religious, humanistically religious, and mystically religious. The nominally religious Mason has been through the Masonic rites, stressing the importance of the Masonic religion, but he has turned Masonry into a social club and secular brotherhood. For him, Masonry is a means to social standing and advancement, such as by assisting his business or employment opportunities through contacts with other Masons. He is content to view Masonry like this. The entire subject of religion is largely irrelevant to him. Many Masons, possibly even a slight majority, fall into this category. But many other Masons see a trend within Masonry toward the next two categories. Number two, the humanistically religious Mason. This Mason accepts, lives, and promotes the religious nature of Masonry, largely at its face value. He accepts the literal or outer meaning of Masonry. He is committed to Masonic truth as he sees it and seeks to live according to Masonic ideals: the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, the immortality of the soul, and Masonry as the hope of the future. This Mason could view the first category Mason as an apostate who has denied and dishonored the sacred truths of Masonry. For the humanistically religious Mason, the claims of Masonry about the inherent harmony of religions are key. Thus, he believes that Masonry seeks true religious brotherhood where men of all faiths may unite in worship to the one true God. He does not consider the matter further and never tries to understand the deeper nature of Masonry. The Mason who lives at this level of Masonry has still not understood Masonry as it really is. In order to understand truly Masonry, we must examine the third level, the mystically religious Mason. This Mason looks at Masonry as an esoteric level. He finds in Masonry, correctly so, a thoroughgoing system of mysticism offering occult enlightenment for those who seek it. He sees almost everything in Masonry as part of the tradition of the ancient mystery schools, Gnostic religions, whose outer forms preserve the genuine secrets of true Masonry from the profane, that is, the unenlightened, whether Mason or not. This Mason views Masons in the second category as somewhat ignorant and naive, as unenlightened to the real nature of Masonry. For the mystically religious Mason, Masonry is the one true religion whose mystical core constitutes the inner truths of all religions. Here is the reason many Masons confess that other Masons live in spiritual ignorance. The question determining authoritative sources: who determines what the ritual will consist of in each Masonic lodge? The answer is that the Grand Lodge of each state has the power to regulate the ritual practiced in that lodge. When one examines Masonry today and compares the different manuals containing the ritual for each state, it is apparent, however, today that the ritual and interpretations given are very close or almost identical from state to state. In addition, there's a vast amount of Masonic literature available to researchers out there. This includes at least 100,000 volumes, among which are a minimum of 600 analytical works giving a broad treatment of the subject of Masonry. There are also numerous exposés of Masonry by former members who have revealed virtually all the secrets of the craft. In this sense, Masonry is a secret society only to those who haven't read the literature. The Blue Lodge, the Scottish Rite, and the York Rite. That's on page 2 of your handout there. The Blue Lodge is the parent or mother lodge of Freemasonry. It confers the first three Masonic degrees. Number one is the Entered Apprentice, where a man is initiated into the beginning mysteries of the fraternity of Freemasonry. Number two, the degree of Fellow Craft. And number three, the Master Mason degree. Before they may proceed to the higher degrees, all men must go through the first three degrees of the Blue Lodge. After passing the three Blue Lodge degrees, the candidate may choose not to proceed further. Many, and perhaps most, Masons stop with the first three degrees. If the candidate chooses to proceed higher, it must be along one or both of two other branches in Masonry. One branch is the Scottish Rite, which advances by numerical degrees, beginning with the fourth and ending with the 32nd, the 33rd degree being either active or honorary. The other major branch is the York Rite, which goes through designations called the Chapter, Council, and Commandery degrees, ending with the degree of Knights Templar. So you can see all the different ones there. Under York Rite, after you've completed Blue Lodge, if you decide to go through the York Rite branch, you go through Mark Master, then Past Master, Most Excellent Master, Royal Arch Mason, Royal Master, Select Master, Super Excellent Master, Order of the Red Cross, Order of the Knights of Malta, Order of Knights Templary Commandery. If you choose the Scottish Rite, then you go through all of those 4 through 33. Secret Master, Perfect Master, Intimate Secretary, Provost and Judge, Intendant of the Building, Alu of the 9, Alu of the 15, Alu of the 12, don't ask me what Alu means, I don't know, Master Architect, Royal Arch of Solomon, Perfect Alu, Knight of the East or Sword, Prince of Jerusalem, Knight of the East and West, Knight of Rose Croy, Grand Pontiff, Master of the Symbolic Lodge, Noachite or Prussian Knight, Knight of the Royal Axe, Chief of the Tabernacle, Prince of the Tabernacle, Knight of the Brazen Serpent, Prince of Mercy, Knight Commander of the Temple, Knight of the Sun, Knight of St. Andrew, Knight Kadosh. Kadosh is Hebrew word for holiness. Inspector Inquisitor, Master of the Royal Secret, and then the 33rd and highest degree is just active or honorary, which is kind of a boring title, really. After all that grandiose predecessors. Besides the degrees, there are many affiliated appendant organizations or side degrees of Masonry. These are orders with specific memberships, youth, women, relatives, collegians, or goals, such as the Shriners, the Ancient Arabic Order of Nobles, or the Mystic Shrine. Until recently, Masonry existed in 164 countries, According to the encyclopedia, and by the way, this book I'm reading from is about 10 years old, so I don't know how much updated it would be here. According to the Encyclopedia Britannica, its membership of 6 million qualified Masonry as the largest worldwide secret society. At least 15,300 lodges once operated in the U.S., and more than 33,700 around the world. Today, these figures are down somewhat. As of 1998, so you can see this is a little old, there were 13,200 U.S. lodges and a worldwide membership of fewer than 5 million. England has more than 7,000 lodges, Canada 1,600. Cuba, India, and West Germany each have more than 300. Recent efforts are underway to increase Masonic membership and influence worldwide. Critic Paul Fisher, with a background in military intelligence and politics, observes that Masons have dominated the U.S. Supreme Court since 1941 to 1971, during that period. From 1941 to 46, the ratio was 5 to 4. From 1949 to 1956, it was 8 to 1. From 1969 to 1971, it was again 5 to 4. He concludes that such influence may have contributed to the High Court's, quote, determination to move the nation away from an emphasis on Judeo-Christian values in public life, helping further to secularize society and sustain, quote, an epoch of revolutionary liberalism with far-reaching consequences. Now, that's quite a statement of a military intelligence guy, who's done a study on this. Because this is an organization that claims to be moral and that claims to base their views on Scripture. And he's saying that that dominance in the Supreme Court is very likely the reason that our court made such horrendous and controversial decisions moving us away from historic Christianity. So, you know, I can't prove it one way or the other, but it's an interesting claim. If there is any substance at all to Fisher's claims, then addressing the religious views, content, and goals of Freemasonry is hardly an idle task, but personally relevant for all of us. In the 13th degree of the Scottish Rite, the oath reads, quote, I furthermore promise and swear to use every means in my power to contribute with all my might to the propagation of liberal ideas wheresoever I may be. Now, what they mean by the word liberal, I don't know. The word liberal, a long time ago, used to be what today we would think of conservative. Classical liberalism, if you hear somebody refer to that, would be sort of like, well, I don't know if you'd say modern conservatism, but older conservatism, true conservatism. So it gets kind of confusing. The liberal, of course, became what it is now. So I don't know how they're using that word. But according to Masonic and congressional records, as many as 14 U.S. presidents have been Masons. Again, according to Masonic records. Now, do they fudge them? Do they lie? Do they say you're Masons and you're not? You know, I don't know. Whether there's some putting people in here. Particularly when we get into some of the movie stars and stuff like that. I have no reason to say that any of these people are not Masons. I'm just saying I don't know if they could have done that with their records. But 14 U.S. presidents that they list, George Washington, James Monroe, Andrew Jackson, James Polk, James Buchanan, Andrew Johnson, James Garfield, William McKinley, Teddy Roosevelt, William Howard Taft, Warren Harding, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Harry Truman, and Gerald Ford, plus 14 vice presidents. The influence of Masonry in U.S. government was revealed by the Senate Congressional Record of September 9, 1987. In the proceedings, some members of the Senate Judiciary Committee had questioned the propriety of appointing Judge David Sintel as a U.S. Circuit Judge for the District of Columbia. The objection was raised on the grounds that he was a Mason. In response to this, a number of senators who were Masons vigorously protested. They felt it was unthinkable to question an appointee merely because he was a member of the lodge. They considered it, quote, extraordinary, totally unwarranted, most absurd, galling and preposterous, and so on. They were, quote, astounded and, quote, aghast. During the debate, Masonic Senators Thurmond and Simpson and Senate Majority Leader Robert Byrd, 33rd degree, all of whom admitted pride of membership, revealed that Masons comprised 41 members of the federal judiciary, half the membership of the Senate Judiciary Committee, 18 senators, including Lloyd Benson, who was, of course, a former vice presidential nominee. Sam Nunn, Bob Dole, 33rd degree, Jesse Helms, John Glenn, and Mark Hatfield. 76 members of the House of Representatives, including Speaker of the House Jim Wright, Claude Pepper, William Ford, Dan Glickman, who I believe was a representative from Kansas, back in the 80s, and I don't know how long he was there, Trent Lott, and others. At least two senators are 33rd degree Masons, Bob Dole and Robert Byrd. According to Masonic records, many other famous and influential persons have become Masons. These include Norman Vincent Peale, a power of positive thinking promoter, Senator Howard Baker, Congressman Jack Kemp, who is also a vice presidential candidate, Irving, with Bob Dole, by the way, Irving Berlin, actor Ernest Borgnine, William Jennings Bryan, scientist Luther Burbank, comedian Bob Burns, Christopher Kit Carson, Sir Winston Churchill, Mark Twain, Ty Cobb, William Buffalo Bill Cody, motion picture producer Cecil B. DeMille, Thomas E. Dewey, Major General James R. Doolittle, Sherlock Holmes author Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, Edward VIII, Duke of Windsor. If you've seen The King's Speech, he's the son, the prince that abdicated, if you've seen that movie. Douglas Fairbanks Sr., comedian W.C. Fields, Henry Ford, Benjamin Franklin, author Arthur Godfrey, Johann Wolfgang von Goethe, Barry M. Goldwater, that one surprised me, astronaut Virgil E. Grissom, Oliver Hardy of Laurel and Hardy, influential Hindu guru Swami Vivekananda, Farudin Ali Ahmed, the president of India, former president of India, composer Franz Joseph Haydn, FBI director J. Edgar Hoover, magician Harry Houdini, John Paul Jones, King Kamehameha, something like that. Forgive me for my pathetic pronunciation. King of Hawaii, Rudyard Kipling, Colonel Charles A. Lindbergh, General Douglas MacArthur, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court John Marshall, Presbyterian clergyman and chaplain of the U.S. Senate Peter Marshall, motion picture producer Louis Mayer, Charles H. Mayo, founder of Mayo Clinic, Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart, Admiral Robert E. Peary, James C. Penney, founder of J.C. Penney Company, General John J. Pershing, Paul Revere, all seven of the Ringling Brothers, cowboy hero Roy Rogers, Will Rogers, Sir Walter Scott, comedian Richard Bernard, Red Skelton, French writer and philosopher Francois Voltaire, General Jonathan M. Wainwright, Lew Wallace, author of Ben-Hur, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court Earl Warren, and Booker T. Washington, and many others. Booker T. Washington also surprised me. The Lodge also exerts considerable influence through affiliated or pendant organizations, which usually espouse similar beliefs. Masonry is generally considered to be the mother organization of these groups, whose rituals, secrets, or goals may have similar characteristics to those of Freemasonry. In 1912, Wagner observed, "The whole secret society system, with its countless lodges and their organizations, is an outgrowth of Masonry. All the secret societies, even the so-called minor orders, have assimilated and incorporated more or less of the fundamental principles of Masonry. A comparison of their various rituals with the rituals of Masonry demonstrates this fact." Before I go on there and read some of them, you'll recall that the Mormons incorporated a lot of the secret handshakes and signs and rituals into some of their things, and that the Mormonism is a very secret society in many ways.
So is baseball.
Oh, yeah. Maybe Major League Baseball and NFL football players. Those guys on the sidelines doing that. Yeah, I never noticed that. Never thought about that. So some of these daughter organizations are officially Masonic, and others are not, but all of them have been influenced by Masonry. For example, the so-called animal lodges reflect Masonic influence, but are not strictly Masonic organizations. Among these are the Fraternal Order of Eagles, FOE, the Benevolent and Protective Order of Elks, BPOE, the Loyal Order of Moose, LOOM. Others include the Independent Order of Odd Fellows. That's what it says. The Woodsmen of the World, the Knights of Pythias, a Tall Cedars in Lebanon, the mystic order of Baal prophets of the Enchanted Realm, Grotto, Acacia Fraternity, and the Knights of the Red Cross of Constantine. There are Masonically affiliated female organizations such as Daughters of the Nile, the Order of the Eastern Star, the Order of Amaranth, the White Shrine of Jerusalem, and the Daughters of Mokana. In Secret Teachings, a book that they wrote, these authors, we showed how the teachings of the Order of the Eastern Star parallel those of Masonry. Recently, full-length books critiquing the Order and showing its connection to Masonry have appeared, including Hidden Secrets of the Eastern Star and the Masonic Connection. There are also numerous affiliated youth organizations such as the Order of Demolé, Order of Job's Daughters, Order of the Builders, and Order of the Rainbow. Occasionally, the Kiwanis, Rotary, Lions Club, American Legion, and Veterans of Foreign Wars are incorrectly associated with Masonry or its affiliated organizations. Unlike Masonry, these are not religious groups having religious goals and should not be confused with Masonry. Finally, the Lodge has exerted its influence in the history of Mormonism and in liberal religions such as Unitarian Universalism. As we documented in Secret Teachings, their book, Masonry is influential enough within the church that most major conservative Christian denomination national bodies have issued official declarations condemning Masonry as a non-Christian or an anti-Christian religion. Most Southern Baptists accept it. We'll talk about that later. Most of these reports acknowledge that the principal reason many Christians have joined Freemasonry is out of simple ignorance. They do not know the contradictions between Masonry and Christianity. This indicates that the church must do a better job educating her members about the craft. Former Mason Jack Harris observes that, quote, many ministers, elders, deacons, trustees, and Sunday school teachers are Masons. Wherever we look in the Christian world, we find the influence of Masonry. Masonic author Serza divulges that many officers in the Salvation Army are Masons. Investigator Stephen Knight supplies evidence, quote, the Vatican itself is infiltrated by Freemasons. In Europe, the Presbyterian Church of Wales is strongly influenced by Masonry. Knight observes that thousands of practicing Christians in Britain today worship the Freemasonic God, believing it to be precisely the same as the Christian God. He further states, quote, despite overwhelming evidence of Masonry's incompatibility with Christianity, the Church of England has been a stronghold of Freemasonry for more than 200 years. Traditionally, joining the Brotherhood and advancing it within it has always been the key to preferment in the Church. That is the Church of England. In fact, Masonic power is so strong that the Church dares not offend or provoke thousands of influential and often financially substantial laymen by inquiring into the religious implications of Freemasonry. Freemasonry is anxious to maintain good relations with the church for one principal reason. The church continues to provide a large number of converts to Freemasonry. And there is a particular oath offered specifically for Christian ministers who are joining the lodge. This oath pledges them the idea that true Christianity must safeguard the interests of Masonry. Quote, you, brother, are a preacher of Christian religion. You cannot, therefore, but be fond of the order, Masonic order, and zealous for the interests of Freemasonry. Whoever is warmed with the spirit of Christianity must love Freemasonry. Why has Masonry infiltrated the church? One reason is that Masonry asserts everywhere that it is not a religion or a substitute for religion. It claims to be merely a fraternal brotherhood seeking to better the world. It asserts that it is fully compatible with all religions and that there is absolutely nothing in Masonry that is opposed to Christian belief. In addition, Masonry speaks openly of the importance of belief in God and claims that each member is free to interpret God in any manner. Further, many Masons openly proclaim that Freemasonry, quote, exists to assist or support the church. But as we will see in the following, Masonry is also a non-Christian religion. Also, it is a substitute for the Christian faith and for all other faiths, and it believes it is superior to every other religion. Masonry's appeal, it's attractive to people for many reasons. For instance, it claims to be divinely instituted, and therefore it appeals to man's search for God, or a God substitute. Some are curious and are lured by its secrecy. They enjoy belonging to a society in which only they have access to its inner mysteries. And because Masonry enjoys a measure of respect in society, some people are attracted by its lofty ideals and humanitarian works. Others are drawn to Masonry because they like the idea of a worldwide brotherhood encompassing idealistic goals by which to better the world. Some, too, are charmed simply by its social fellowship. Others are fascinated by the symbolism and the pagan mysteries of Masonry. They enjoy its similarities to many older religions. Such persons, quote, love ritual and are held enthralled by the wonder and mystery of the Masonic work and rituals. Consider the following statement in Robert's book, The Craft and Its Symbols, describing how a Mason feels in the ritual of the first degree of Masonry, the entered apprentice. Quote, you could not have helped but to be thrilled and full of pride when you reached the northeast corner of the lodge. There you stood, a just and upright Mason. Every brother present exulted with you. You were about to complete the first step of the most meaningful journey of your life. Some people are allured by the power of Masonry. For example, the worshipful master exercises absolute control over his lodge. Others see in Masonry the ability to seek occult power, quote, a secret order which can have great power if properly developed. All in all, Masonry is attractive because it offers brotherhood, social prestige, mystery, lofty ideals, the lure of secrecy, the hope of religious quest, and spiritual power. But as we will see, Masonry has hidden motives for its lofty ideals, its humanitarianism, and all else that makes it attractive to outsiders. Origins. We briefly touched on this. The historical antecedents to Masonry are shrouded in antiquity. Coyle observes in his Freemasonry Through Six Centuries, quote, the origin of Freemasonry, its early development and character are unknown and likely to remain so. Most scholars believe it is difficult to trace the origins of Masonry, as it is known today, to before the early 1700s. We do know that in 1717, four lodges combined to form the first Grand Lodge in London, England. Today, all Masonic Grand Lodges in the world trace their origin to this first Grand Lodge. The first U.S. Lodge began in 1729, the first Canadian in 1745. However, an older type of Masonry, the operative or working Masons, essentially itinerant craftsmen, can be traced back to the Middle Ages. These persons formed primitive trade unions, lodges, for protection and professional credibility. These lodges were the foundation for modern Masonry, which is termed speculative Masonry, to contrast it from the older operative Masonry. Some of the rituals, the symbols, and many of the teachings of Masonry, however, can be traced to ancient paganism, and in particular to the ancient mystery religions of Egypt, Rome, Greece, and other cultures. Modern Masonry owes a great deal to several medieval occult practices, and religions from which many of its teachings were derived. Haywood states in The Great Teachings of Masonry, quote, all our historians, at least nearly all of them, agree that Freemasonry owes very much to certain occult societies or groups that flourished, often in secret, during the late Middle Ages and even into the after-Reformation times. Chief among these were the Rosicrucians and the Knights Templar. Another form of influential medieval occultism, Kabbalism, also exerted great influence upon Masonry, as virtually all Masonic historians admit. Scholar Dr. Childs Johnson, who holds three earned doctorates, lists such groups as the Rosicrucians and two other occult orders, the Golden Dawn and the Illuminati, as having influenced Masonry. He also observes, quote, today the chief religious influence of Masonry may be observed in the Unitarian Universalist Church, in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and in witchcraft. Masonry stresses the importance of secrecy for two principal reasons. The first, that the element of secrecy itself is something that attracts people and makes them feel important. They have access to vital secrets and truth that other men do not share. The second reason is that secrecy offers the craft a stabilizing influence. Men who swear extremely solemn oaths of secrecy conclude not only the information received is important, but also that it must be protected at all costs. But there are other reasons for Mason secrecy, reasons both religious and sometimes political. By maintaining secrecy, Masonry can hide its religious nature from the outside world and secure converts who would not otherwise join. In addition, some believe that there are secret political goals of the lodge. Paul Fisher observes, Masonry has 25 landmarks, or canons, which are unrepealable and can never be changed. Landmark number 23 concerns secrecy of the institution. It admonishes initiates that to change or abrogate such a requirement of confidentiality would be social suicide, and death of the order would follow legalized exposure. That, you think about that for a minute. How odd is it that something would die if it were exposed? You talk about something smelling funny, something shrouded in secrecy and that depends on secrecy to survive.
Oh, when the light shines darkness.
Yeah, exactly. Continuing, the same landmark notes that Freemasonry has lived unchanged for centuries as a secret association. But as an open society, it would not last for many years. One wonders why the organization must be so secret. Why would openness bring death of the order? Why would it not last for many years if its secret activities were unmasked? Certainly the landmark suggests the craft is something more than a fraternal and charitable organization. Why hide good works? The answer is Freemasonry in America and elsewhere is far more than a fraternal organization. It never hides its charitable endeavors. But its secret work is something else entirely. And that secret work frequently has involved subversion of the existing political order in any given state. The goals of Masonry are to unite to the world under the umbrella of a doctrine teaching the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, and the immortality of the soul. Masons foresee the day when all religious divisions and sectarianism, that is what Masonry views as specific or exclusivistic and therefore divisive religious beliefs, like Jesus is the only way, they look forward to the day when that will be wiped away and a new era of universal peace, brotherhood, and religious faith will emerge. Why does Masonry seek to change the world? Because it teaches that all non-Masons are living in spiritual darkness. The result of this premise is that if true world brotherhood is ever to be achieved, it demands for its success a worldwide religion of Masonry. Thus, informed Masons partake in, quote, the glorious privilege which belongs to Masonry as the precious jewel of its prerogative to be the chiefest of human agencies used by God to bring forward the rosy dawn of this magnificent future. If Masonry is to one day rule the world, then all non-Masonic beliefs must either be abandoned or absorbed into Masonry. Sectarian religions with exclusive teachings, such as the Christian faith, simply cannot be permitted if Masonry is to succeed. Masonry then claims that it is the light of the world, and that only its ideals can save the world from its errors and superstition. All of this is why Masonry is far more than simply a worldwide fraternal brotherhood. Masonry desires to change the world, and one way to do this is by influencing the church. Six principal characteristics which help form the worldview of Masonry. Number one, Masonry is both static and fluid, meaning that it changes. Static meaning that it doesn't change. They're identical the world over, the points of Masonry. But it's also fluid historically. It changes with the times. For instance, in the Middle Ages, Masonry was often compatible with Christianity. Today it is not. Probably because in the Middle Ages it was a operative craft, workmen, actually doing Masonic work. Masonry is liberal religion, number two. It is a humanistic religion stressing the inherent divinity and universal brotherhood of mankind. Sounds like Mormonism there. Liberal religion has long stressed the fatherhood of God, brotherhood of man, and salvation by works and character, and it characteristically teaches Unitarianism and Universalism. This is why Masonry reaches out to liberal ministers. The relation of the liberal churches, quote, to the fraternal orders is a pamphlet published by the American Unitarian Association and written by E.A. Coyle, a Unitarian minister and Mason. In that article, he pleads for a closer cooperation between Masonry and liberal religion because of their similar beliefs about God, man, and salvation by character. Quote, modern Freemasonry owes much to the thought of the 18th century And this concept of God reflects the prevalent deism, in which God is the supreme being, the creator who has set the world in motion, laid down his moral laws for men to obey, but does not continue to act personally in the world in mercy or in judgment. Masonry is a hierarchical system, number three. It offers different levels of practice, interpretation, and belief. Quote, there is much that is still unknown to even the ardent Masonic student. Most of the truly great Masonic writers have deplored the lack of esoteric Masonic knowledge among the craft in general. The average Mason is lamentably ignorant of the real meaning of Masonic symbology and knows as little of its esoteric teaching. This is a quote from Masonic authorities. Number four, Masonry is a syncretistic faith. It claims that it alone is the true religion behind all limiting lesser religions and dogmas. The true disciple of ancient Masonry has given up forever the worship of personalities. As a Mason, his religion must be universal. Christ, Buddha, or Muhammad, the names mean little, for he recognizes only the light and not the bearer. He worships at every shrine, bows before every altar, whether in temple, mosque, or cathedral, realizing with his truer understanding the oneness of all spiritual truth. No true Mason can be narrow, for his lodge is the divine expression of all broadness. There is no place for little minds in a great work. Masonry is not a religion, but religion. Not a church, but a worship, in which men of all religions may unite. It is not the rival of any religion, but the friend of all, laying emphasis upon those truths which underlie all religions and are the basis and consecration of each. Those are quotations from Masonic authorities. Masonry is a New Age mysticism. It offers an individual Mason the potential for higher consciousness and occult development. In other words, a Mason may, in his ignorance, worship the god or gods of his specific religion, whether it be Christianity or Hinduism, but these are really false gods and idols. And number six, Masonry is the one true religion. As the Mason becomes instructed in the truths of Masonry and is re-educated along the lines of Masonic religion, he will realize the one true religion lies far beyond the limiting doctrines of the religions that others follow. This is why many Masons see the work of Masonry as that of rebuilding the temple of fallen humanity. So you get that language of original Masonry, you know, putting bricks together, building things, craft, architects, builders, and so forth. But what they're doing is rebuilding the temple of fallen humanity. You know, their lodges are called temples, Masonic temples. You wouldn't call it that, I wouldn't think, if it wasn't a place of worship. That's what are temples, after all, if they're not places of worship. Despite some of the foregoing quotes from Masonic literature, many Masons go out of their way to claim that Masonry is not a religion, nor a substitute for religion. The claim that Masonry is not a religion is found throughout Masonic literature. When they say that it is not a religion, they are either misinformed or perhaps even lying. You get this sort of double talk like we saw with Mormons. If Freemasonry is a religion, as even many Masonic scholars confess, why do virtually all Masons say it's not a religion? Do they deny the truth to gain converts to Masonry who otherwise might not join? Is lying about the nature of Masonry necessary to furthering the goals of the Venerable Lodge? Albert Mackey held the highest positions Masonry has to offer. For many years, he was a 33rd degree Mason and Secretary General of the Supreme Council of the 33rd degree Scottish Rite. In his book, The Manual of the Lodge, Mackey describes the candidate who seeks to enter the Masonic Lodge. No matter what religious belief he brings to Masonry, such belief did not bring him into the light, but kept him in darkness. Whether Christian, Jew, Hindu, Muslim, or Buddhist, all candidates live in equal darkness outside of Masonry. Quote, there he stands without our portals on the threshold of his new Masonic life in darkness, helplessness, and ignorance. Having been wandering amid the errors and covered over with the pollutions of the outer and profane world, he comes inquiringly to our door seeking the new birth and asking a withdrawal of the veil which conceals divine truth from his uninitiated sight. Some quotes from Masonic authors. There is under all creeds one universal religion. This one true religion is the very soul of Masonry. quote, "It is true that Masonry is not a religion, but it is religion. Religions are many. Religion is one. It brings together men of all creeds in behalf of those truths which are greater than all sects, deeper than all doctrines." Another quote, "Scarcely a Masonic discourse is pronounced or a Masonic lesson read by the highest officer or the humblest lecturer that does not earnestly teach this one true religion, which is the very soul of Masonry, its basis and apex, its light and power. Upon that faith it rests, and in that faith it lives and labors, and by that faith it will conquer at last." With respect to Christianity, Albert Mackey says, "It is acknowledged that the Christianization of Freemasonry, the interpretation of its symbols from a Christian point of view, is wrong. Quote, "This is an error into which some have fallen. It is impossible to derive Freemasonry from Christianity. Freemasonry's religion was derived from the ancient priesthood." Joseph Fort Newton, perhaps the most popular Masonic writer of all time, acknowledges that, quote, "The Pilgrims and the Puritans were not of our craft, and if we may judge from their real interests, we may be sure that they did not care anything about it." In his The Great Teachings of Masonry, Haywood argues that Christians who think that Masonry is Christian are simply wrong. Many brethren, misled by the predominantly scriptural cast of the work, and misunderstanding a few scattered references here and there, assume that in some sense Freemasonry is specifically a Christian institution. These brethren should be made to understand the facts in the case. The ritual of Masonry is not built on the text of the Bible, for the great major incidents in the ritual, and this applies to all the grades, are not found in the book at all. Book, capital B, meaning the Bible. I'm very honest about that. He acknowledges that the main reason historically why Christians joined Masonry was because of, quote, "the serious and religious nature of the ritual, as well as the citations from the Bible." In other words, Christians joined Masonry because it appeared devout and biblical, even though this was not its intent or its true nature. On this subject, almost everyone agrees, Masonic, secular, and Christian authorities alike, Masonry is not Christian. The standard work on Masonic history freely admits that in the constitutions of 1723, Christianity was discarded. It seems, therefore, that only Christian Masons believe that Masonry is Christian. That is, Christians who have joined the Masonic Lodge and not really know what they're doing, getting into. Other fellow Masons do not believe this, nor do former Masons who are now Christians, nor do secular researchers on the subject. Even Stephen Knight, who defines himself, quote, "as a neutral investigator holding no brief for Christianity," admits, quote, "one does not have to be a theologian, nor even a Freemason or a Christian, to recognize that Christians and Freemasons would have to worship the same God for the two to be compatible. But Masonry and Christianity are mutually exclusive. There is overwhelming evidence of Masonry's incompatibility with Christianity." One of the clearest statements documenting the true goal of Masonry comes from the 28th and 30th degrees. Masonry had earlier promised the candidate that it would not hinder him from following his own religious beliefs. But Masonry shows that this was only a ruse in order to get a person started in Masonry. For the goal was that the lodge would eventually change a person's original beliefs. This ritual teaches that all men are lost in spiritual darkness and not true Masons until they accept this. This statement also reveals that the true goal of the Masonic Lodge is to have its initiates finally drop and repudiate their previous religious beliefs, their, quote, "superstitions and prejudices," and to accept the final and only truth of Masonry. Thus, the 28th degree teaches that, quote, "the first degree represents man when he has sunken from his original lofty estate. He is emphatically profane, enveloped in darkness, poor, and destitute of spiritual knowledge, and emblematically naked. The material darkness which is produced by the bandage over his eyes is an emblem of the darkness of his soul." So that's one of their rites, placing a bandage over the eyes, and it's an emblem of the blindness that the person was in before Freemasonry. In the 30th degree, it is revealed to the initiate that his earlier religious beliefs are superstition, and that the claim of religious compatibility was only a ruse to get him started in Masonry. This is a quote from a scholar on this named Blanchard. In all the preceding degrees, you must have observed that the object of Scotch Masonry is to overthrow all kinds of superstition, and that by admitting in her bosom, on the terms of the strictest equality, the members of all religions, of all creeds, and of all countries, without any distinction whatever, she has, and indeed can have, but one single object, and that is to restore to the grand architect of the universe, talk about that later, the G-A-O-T-U, which is the acrostic for it, that's their name for God, the grand architect of the universe, to the common father of the human race, those who are lost in the maze of impostures invented for the sole purpose of enslaving them. The Knights Kadosh recognize no particular religion, and for that reason we demand of you nothing more than to worship God. And whatever may be the religious forms imposed upon you by superstition at a period of your life when you were incapable of discerning truth from falsehood, we do not even require you to relinquish them. Time and study alone can enlighten you. But remember that you will never be a true Mason unless you repudiate forever all superstitions and prejudices. So they bring you in saying, oh, we don't care who you worship and how you worship, and continue worshiping your own God in your own way. The goal is to get you to keep going so that eventually they can convince you that all of that is silly superstition and you need to drop it. Masonry claims to honor, reverence, and respect the Bible as a great light for mankind. One standard Masonic authority states, upon the altar of every Masonic lodge lies the Holy Bible. I remember in Florida, a neighbor of mine that I was trying to witness to invited me to his Masonry meeting and went in, and I really don't remember much about it other than some strange rituals and things like that. But he knew I was a seminary student, and he laid great emphasis on the fact that we always have the Bible open up there on the altar, I guess he called it. I don't remember. I don't know what degree he was, how far advanced he was in it, how much he even knew. But it didn't take long for me to be present in the meeting to think, you know, that smell of this is fishy. This doesn't strike me as Christian. Upon the altar of every Masonic lodge lies the Holy Bible, our volume of sacred law, and a great light in Masonry. The Bible opens when the lodge opens and closes when the lodge closes. The book of the will of God rules the lodge in its labors as the sun rules the day. No Mason needs to be told what a great place the Bible has in the Masonry of our day. Almost every name found in our ceremonies is a biblical name. The spirit of the Bible, its faith, its attitude toward life, pervades Masonry. Upon the Bible, every Mason takes solemn vows of loyalty. It is the book which tells us the purest truth about God. While we honor every book of faith, with us the Bible is supreme. Its truth is inwrought in the fiber of our being. In truth, however, Masonry rejects the authority of the Bible and denies what the Bible teaches about itself. For Masonry, the Bible, like the scriptures of all religions, Quran and so on, is merely a symbol and not the literal word of God to us. Albert Pike emphasized that the Hebrew books of the Bible were written in symbols unintelligible to the profane, that is, the non-Mason. So only Masons can, quote, properly interpret the Bible. Have you heard that before? And when the Bible is properly interpreted, it teaches Masonic doctrine. Surprise! Chase's Digest of Masonic Lodge states the Masonic view of the Bible clearly. To require that a candidate profess a belief in the divine authority of the Bible is a serious innovation in the very body of Masonry. The Jews, the Chinese, the Turks, each reject either the Old or the New Testament, or both. And yet we see no good reason why they should not be made Masons. In fact, Blue Lodge Masonry has nothing whatever to do with the Bible. It is not founded on the Bible. If it were, it would not be Masonry. All Masonic authorities, quote, establish three things. Number one, that the Bible is only a symbol. Number two, that a Mason is not required to believe its teachings. And three, that some other book may be substituted for it. Though the Bible is one of the three great lights of Masonry, it is a light only in the sense that it is merely a symbol of divine truth or of the will of God as individually interpreted by a Mason. For example, quote, when our rituals and monitors tell us the Bible is one of the great lights of Masonry, and that as such it is the rule and guide to our faith, it can only be speaking symbolically. as it certainly is when speaking of the other two great lights, the square and the compass. But the square and the compass are universal symbols throughout Masonry. The Bible is not granted such status. That is why the Masonic volume of sacred law, the religious scripture appropriate to a given culture, and not the Bible, is the true great light. The Bible is only a limited symbol. It is only a localized light for Christian lands. One of the reasons the Bible is used in Masonry is the same reason the scriptures of other religions are used in other countries. The lodge tricks men into swearing to uphold Masonry on the basis of that which they consider most holy, their own scriptures. Thus, a Christian swears on the Bible to uphold Masonry without understanding that Masonry denies or distorts every major doctrine of the Bible. A leading Masonic authority, Roland Blackmer, M.D., observes that the Bible is almost never read in the lodge. In 30 years of almost constant attendance at lodge and in many jurisdictions, the writer has never heard the Bible read in the lodge, though portions of scriptures are occasionally quoted in the ritualistic work. The eminent Masons all contend that there is a veil upon the scriptures, which, when removed, leaves them clearly in accord with Masonic teachings and in essential harmony with other sacred books. The fact that there are now several Masonic editions of the Bible, all seeking to lend scriptural authority to Masonry, merely adds insult to injury. Masonic view of God. Those who become Masons must declare belief in a supreme being. Most Christian Masons assume that this supreme being is the God of the Bible. However, it is easy to prove that Masonry does not believe in and worship the same God as the biblical deity. What does Masonry believe about God? It teaches the general concept of God as the creator, sustainer, and creative principle, architect of the universe. This is why Masons refer to God as the great architect of the universe, G-A-O-T-U. Masonry offers so many different views of God because it refuses to define God clearly. Masonry admits that God is infinite, eternal, unitarian, boundless, universal, and undenominational, a vast cosmic divine spirit, but it goes no further. Thus, in its ranks is found a morass of conflicting and competing concepts of God. When the Masonic Lodge allows its members obedience and allegiance to their different gods, the result, from a Christian perspective at least, can only be spiritual deception and idolatry. For Masonry argues that all Masons must worship their own gods, whatever those gods may be. But if there is one true God, as Jesus taught, then the Masonic approach is engaging in spiritual deception and promoting belief in a multitude of false gods. So how can Christian Masons logically join and swear allegiance to this? If Christian Masons really believe that there is only one true God, aren't they encouraging the acceptance of false gods with all that this implies? For Christian Masons to encourage all Masons to worship and do their duty to their various gods constitutes the very kind of idolatry that God severely judged Israel for. Masonry teaches that the one true God is indescribable and unknowable, considering the following comments by Coyle. Men have to decide whether they want a God like the ancient Hebrew Yahweh, a partisan tribal God, with whom they can talk and argue, and from whom they can hide if necessary, or a boundless, eternal, universal, undenominational, and international divine spirit so vastly removed from the speck called man that it cannot be known, named, or approached. That's deism. So soon as man begins to laud his God and endow him with the most perfect human attributes, such as justice, mercy, beneficence, etc., the divine essence is depreciated and despoiled. The Masonic test for admission is a supreme being, and any qualification added is an innovation and distortion. So in other words, there's apparently no real belief that man is created in the image of God, and that we can look here and say there are things like love and justice and goodness and kindness and mercy and derive truth about God, that these are reflections of God as he imprinted them in the human race. No, anytime we engage in that sort of thing, we're demeaning God, and we're engaging in just foolhardy things. In truth, he's just unknowable. You just can't know anything about him. That's the deist conception of God. Masonry offers the conception and
qualification of God at its higher levels as pantheistic. The Masonic God is clearly a deistic God. This, too, is a particular conception, and that it rules out many other aspects of the deity. The Masonic God is a Unitarian God, meaning they deny the Trinity. Masonry accepts a particular form of pantheism called panentheism. Quote, in its doctrines concerning the divine immanence, Freemasonry is decidedly pantheistic, partaking of the various shades of that view of the divine. God, the great architect of the universe, is the great soul of the universe, and the universe is the garment in which he is clothed. That sort of pantheistic language. God is in everything. You know, pan means all, everything, and so pantheistic God is in everything. The Masonic view of the revelation of God in the lower degrees is deistic, but in the higher degrees it becomes pantheistic. This peculiar pantheistic conception of deity, which is passed from India through the secret doctrines of the Kabbalah into modern speculative Freemasonry. In Masonry, a God distinct from the life of nature has no existence. Pagan conceptions of the deity. Although the ultimate deity of Masonry is allegedly unapproachable and unknowable, parts of Masonry clearly reflect a pagan concept of the deity. In the Royal Arch Degree of the York Rite, the secret name of the Masonic deity is revealed to be Jabulon. Masons below that degree, therefore, such as those who have only taken the first three degrees of the Blue Lodge, do not understand that the great architect of the universe is also this deity, Jabulon. Jabulon is an embarrassment to many Masons. For example, speaking of one Masonic researcher, Stephen Knight, in his expose, The Brotherhood, reveals, quote, I have spoken to no less than 57 long-standing Royal Arch Freemasons, who he says were happy to discuss all aspects of Masonry with him. However, all but four lost their self-assurance and composure when I said, what about Jabulon? All of the Masons attempted to move the conversation to another topic. If I insisted on returning to Jabulon, three separate syllable things, almost invariably the interview would be unceremoniously terminated. According to Knight, even Albert Pike had a problem with the word. Pike allegedly stated, quote, no man or body of men can make me accept as a sacred word, as a symbol of the infinite and eternal Godhead, a mongrel word in part composed of the name of an accursed and beastly heathen god whose name has been for more than 2,000 years an appellation of the devil. That's the Baal part of the word. Jabulon, the Baal part is taken from Baal. On that, we can agree with Albert Pike. Who or what is Jabulon? Masonic authorities give different specific meanings to the term, but they are in agreement that the syllables of the term invoke pagan deities. Most probably, the word is a composite of the Hebrew god Jehovah, Yah, J-A, the Canaanite god Baal, B-U-L, and the Egyptian god Osiris, or On, which is a corruption of Os, a shortened form of Osiris. In this ritual, Masonry connects the one true righteous God of the Bible with evil and pagan deities of the ancients. In other words, every Royal Archmason is told that the true name for the God he has been praying to throughout the different degrees of Masonry is Jehovah joined with the Canaanite Baal and Egyptian On, or possibly Osiris. Wagner observes, quote, in this compound name, an attempt is made to show by a coordination of divine names, the unity, identity, and harmony of the Hebrew, Assyrian, and Egyptian God ideas, and the harmony of the Royal Arch religion with these ancient religions. This Masonic unity of God is peculiar. It is the doctrine that the different names of gods, Brahma, Jehovah, Baal, Bel, Om, On, etc., all denote the general principle in that all religions are essentially the same in their ideas of the divine. Coyle's Masonic Encyclopedia declares, Yah, Bel, and On appear in the American ritual of the Royal Arch degree on the supposition that Yah was the Syriac name of God, Bel or Baal, the Chaldean, and On, the Egyptian. Here Coyle himself admits that Bel refers to the Babylonian god Baal. We will show how serious this is by illustrating the nature of the second deity in the composite term Jabulon, bull or Baal. Baal was a Canaanite nature deity. Wagner also states that the attempt to make Jehovah and the God of Masonry into the same God involves a subtle trick. Even while the Christian Mason professes adherence to the first commandment, he violates it openly. These attempts, quote, are simply cunning devices for misleading and deceiving both the Mason and the profane. They are examples of clever sophistry, of skillful syncretism, of cunningly devised fables and delusive fictions, which have a semblance of truth and fact, but which in reality are only veils and disguises for its refined idolatry. They are skillful professions of adherence to the first commandment, while in fact they are palpable violations of it.